Lots to get to over the next 2 hours. But I wanted to check in on a couple of training camps across the league that just so happened to have former prominent members of the Calgary Flames. And look, it's been an off season of change for the Montreal Canadiens, just now 2 years removed from a Stanley Cup final appearance. You won't find many names still on that team that were in that Stanley Cup final, and it's going to be quite the training camp and quite the season for the Habs. And to dive into some storylines after day one of training camp, we go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and welcome in senior writer from Sportsnet.ca, Eric Engels, joins the program. Eric, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for taking the time this morning. Really appreciate it. Reading your piece up at Sportsnet, .ca, your notebook from day one, it sure seems like injuries appear to be the biggest storyline for the Montreal Canadiens as training camp opens up.
Yeah, especially since they weren't expected to be, right? I mean, we got a list of players that were all healthy, and the only one who was listed as injured was Paul Byron, as we all knew. He was dealing with some lingering injuries from last year and questionable to start the season on time. And all of a sudden, Nick Suzuki's out 2 weeks, and Joel Edmondson's out indefinitely, and Josh Anderson and Jake Evans are day-to-day with upper body injuries, and it's just, you know, obviously not the page you want to start on. So I think that sent some ripples throughout the fan base, and certainly within this room of media members who I'm sitting with right now watching the Canadian scrimmage. You know, it's not good news for them. That being said, it's not like they have expectations to compete for a playoff spot or win the Stanley Cup this year. So, you know, there is some guy named Connor Bedard waiting at the end of this rainbow, and we'll see where the Canadians end up and the configuration of all that.
Not to downplay the Suzuki injury, but it sure seems like the Joel Edmondson one is one that could have the biggest ripple effect for this Habs team.
Yes, that's an accurate statement, if only for the fact that they're so thin in terms of experience on the blue line. And one of the big things, or the biggest priority that they have as a team, is the development of their young players. And one of the things that they want to avoid doing is rushing the development of some of their young defensemen. And this, you know, they were already in a bit of a precarious position as far as that's concerned, because they've got Mike Matheson and Joel Edmondson and David Savard and Chris Weidman, and beyond that, no real experienced defenseman here. And then all of a sudden, one of them goes down. And particularly with Edmondson, who came to camp last year and was listed as day-to-day off the hop with a back injury, and then, you know, day-to-day became week-to-week, and week-to-week became, we don't know if we're going to see him this year, and then all of a sudden he's back for the final 24 games, and he's fine, and he comes to the golf tournament this year, and his back is fine. And, you know, Jeff Gordon ends up revealing in an interview yesterday that he had a collision with Suzuki a week ago in an informal skate, and both of them ended up hurt, and it's Edmondson's back again, which is, you know, it's just terrible news for this guy. And it's bad news for the Canadiens, because he wasn't named an alternate captain for no reason. He takes up a lot of space in the room, and much of it on the ice at 6'4", 224 pounds, and they're going to miss him so long as he's not playing. Good thing is, as Gordon said, he's feeling a bit better, and maybe it's, you know, an indeterminate timeline, because they just want to see how he responds over the next week or two to treatment, and he'll be back. That's you know, a good case scenario that everybody's hoping for, especially fans of Joel Edmondson, you know, to be such a good guy who went through so much hard things last year, including the passing of his father. So I'm wishing him the best. Hopefully he can get back soon.
Sure seems like a tough ask for training camp number one under head coach Martin St. Louis, a chance for him, Eric, to set up this team from the start of the year and integrate a number of key new pieces, but it seems to be an uphill battle now, making it all work with so many key guys, at least starting training camp, on the injured list.
Yeah, but, you know, this is the NHL, and it's like this every year. Go team to team. There's few teams that make it through the whole year without any injuries. I don't know if any of them do, and some teams don't play a single game without somebody out. So, You know, whether you deal with it at the start, or you deal with it in the middle, or you deal with it at the end, it's never easy. No matter what your experience level is too. So it's something else for Martin St. Louis to navigate, but the short sample size suggests that he'll be up to that challenge.
Speaking of the head coach, I'm curious how much time you'll spend watching training camp, you know, watching the head coach and seeing how he runs things in his first, chance to run an NHL training camp as a head coach.
It's a good question, and there's only so much you can observe in terms of what he does on the ice.
Yeah.
But you judge by the decisions he makes, how he puts things together. Keep in mind, the Canadiens are playing 8 preseason games, which, for lack of better words, is absolutely ridiculous. and that's why they've got 74 players in camp. And there's going to be a balance that we need to strike between bringing his NHL team together and keeping enough bodies around to, you know, mitigate overusing or injuring players playing in meaningless preseason hockey. I'm not a fan of this. I never have been. A couple of years ago when we had an abridged season in 2020, there was 44 players in camp, and it was 8 or 9 day training camp, and I was cool with that. Not from a media perspective in terms of it's less work or anything like that. It's just so unnecessary as far as I'm concerned. And I don't want to downplay how important it is for these young kids to get an opportunity to get to main camp and test their skills against the best players in the world. But you know, I don't think it needs to be a 17-day experience with 74 players in camp. So yeah, that's just what it is.
One good piece of news for the Habs heading into training camp beginning for them is one guy on the good side of the injury news, which is unusual for him, is Brendan Gallagher, despite what sounds like a little mix-up with Weidman that got him a cut on his face. He seems to be coming into camp fully healthy and ready to go, and seems like a guy, based on everything I've heard out of him early on here, Eric, that comes into this camp with a bit of a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, well, he is Brendan Gallagher, right? I think he was born with a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, look around the hockey world, and hockey fans, pole hockey fans, not just in Montreal, but anywhere, basically. How many of them would suggest that this guy is still capable of scoring, you know, between 22 and 28 goals, or getting back to the type of production we saw from him quite regularly before all the injuries hit? I don't think you'd find too many raising their hands in that camp. And I would never bet against a guy like Brendan Gallagher. Now his hand has been damaged twice. The shot's not the same. His hip, his knee, his leg, he's had a lot of issues to deal with. And he talked all of last year about having the full summer to rebuild, not all of last year, but towards the end of last season, having the full summer to rebuild his body. And when I asked him after his lengthy scrum yesterday, is there anything lingering? He said, no, I'm finally good. And, you know, that's a guy that I would bet on. You know, like,
yep.
I've known Brendan Gallagher his entire career, and not a guy I would bet against. So I think that's going to be a really juicy storyline as we move along here. See how the evolution game can still be there with the individual skills that he's worked on with Martin St. Louis, but also see what kind of redemption story he can author if he remains healthy, which of course is a big caveat with the way he plays the game. So we'll see.
Of course, here in Calgary, a name that a lot of people are intrigued by is Sean Monahan, the former Flame. Not yet cleared for contact, but working his way back from an injury that ended last season short for him. Eric, when he is healthy, where do you see him fitting in best with this Habs lineup? Or is it just too early to tell until he's able to get out there on a full basis with his teammates?
Yeah, I think it really is about seeing what he can prove himself before assuming anything. You know, it's been a rough couple of years for him. Speaking of guys with terrible injuries, just wasn't able to play the brand of hockey that he did establish himself as a player in Calgary as a really productive and essential player. Again, I cheer for guys like this, you know, like the underdogs, the guys who need that type of redemption to be authored. And I don't know if he could ever be the player he was going back to those years in Calgary where he was quite a dominant player. But if he can get anywhere near close to it, it could be a great thing for Montreal, who, if they decide they want to keep him at the end of it, great. They could also flip him for a premium asset after already having acquired a first round pick in the deal. So it's, you know, you hope for him, for his sake, that he can come back and do something really productive and special, because it's been a rough couple of years for him, and by all accounts, he's a great guy.
Chatting with Eric Engels of Sportsnet as Montreal Canadiens open up training camp and get set for their long preseason slog to get underway, going through some storylines with Eric here on the Big Show this morning. You had it in your day one notebook on Sportsnet.ca, but you're intrigued by Evgeny Dodonov and think he's someone that the Habs fans need to keep their eye on ahead of the season.
Yeah, I think so. He's a guy that's been under the radar his entire career, and all he's done is produce at a pretty decent level. You know, he can play up and down the lineup, and what I thought was interesting and noted in my book was what Mike Matheson said about him being one of the most underrated and effective bumper players on the power play, which is something where the Canadians haven't had a lot of. You know, they had it for a bit with Tyler Toffoli, who played that position quite effectively. But, you know, Matheson was just saying he's a guy that does all the kind of little work to keep pucks alive and is always in the right position. And, you know, I'll be curious to see how the Canadians use him with the depth they have at forward. You know, he's looked at as, oh, they got him for Shea Weber and they can flip him and this and that. But I think he's here to play and we'll see where it all goes from there. But this is a player that potentially, even at his, he's a little bit older than he was in the years in Florida when he was playing with Barkov and Huberdeau, but he could be an effective player.
One guy I was really looking forward to asking you about was Kirby Dach, and going back to the draft, the acquisition from the Chicago Blackhawks. This is an intriguing player to me. He's got, I believe, just over 150 games of NHL experience at just 21 years old, but it never clicked in Chicago. Now it feels like it's a clean slate with a Habs group that, you know, look, really fits into his age group really well with the players around him. How do you look at Kirby Dach and the chance that he has in Montreal?
Well, I'm looking at him right now. He's on the ice in the scrimmage, playing the center position. He really can skate. You know, it's hard for me to give you a full opinion on him because it's kind of based on what I saw from him before he got injured at the World Junior. Didn't see much of him in Chicago. And obviously a player with a lot to prove. And I don't know what specifically got him away in Chicago aside from the injuries, but he just hasn't been able to live up to the skill level that he displayed before he had that injury. And I think, you know, at 21 years old, there's a lot of upside there. And that's why the Canadians made the deal. They did their homework on the player. And, you know, naturally, there were things out of his control that led to him not necessarily producing to the level that he should have in Chicago. There were things within his control that hopefully he's addressed and matured and found a way to, you know, be a more productive player, because the Canadians are going to need him to be.
Okay, I've waited as long as I could. I tried to hold it off as you know, for as long as possible, but I have to ask you the question that I'm sure you're getting asked most about, and that's about number one overall pick, Juraj Slafkovský, just 18 years old, coming into his first pro training camp. What are you looking for out of Slafkovský? Is this a guy that comes in with expectations of making the team in year one, or are the Habs going to try to ease this guy into NHL life?
Have you heard of a number one overall pick and not having expectations?
I have not. Not really, no.
Certainly his ambition, certainly the hope for these guys who chose him first overall. I certainly think he'll get a chance one way or another, no matter what happens in this camp. I don't think a decision needs to be made until they really see him in the heat of the action and games that matter. It'd be interesting to see where he lines up in these early scrimmages, but I wouldn't read too much into it considering the lines we're seeing in this first scrimmage, which he's not a part of. He'll be in the afternoon session, which means I think we'll be waiting until Saturday before speaking to him for the first time at this camp. And, you know, he's huge. This guy is huge. He's 238 pounds. He looks it too. He's just a big, big boy. And he's going to use that physicality to his advantage with the skating stride at just 18 years old. That is strong, but not necessarily as explosive as it will be in a few years from now. And, you know, the hand skills are there. The goal-scoring skills are there. The awareness is there. There's a reason he was chosen first overall. I think he's going to take every opportunity possible to prove that as this camp moves along. But you got to give him a chance to settle in, play his first games at this level, his first practices with these level of players, despite the fact that he played on the world stage and against men and against some of the best in the world, albeit certainly not all of the best in the world, given the way the Olympics and world championships are structured. But, you know, the potential is obviously there, and I expect that no matter what happens in camp, how he performs, how many goals he scores, we'll see him for at least a few games in the regular season, and decisions will be made from there.
We know Jake Allen's going to come into the season as the presumptive number one with the injury situation with Carey Price, but is there a battle for the backup spot in Montreal between Montembeau and Caden Primeau?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a battle for the 1B spot. You know, Jake Allen hasn't been a starting goalie in this league other than by default over the last year with Carey Price injured for a couple of years. He played really well when he was healthy. He also suffered two pretty significant injuries last year to his groin. You know, you hope he's fully rehabilitated. I think he's such a pro. He's such an important player in the locker room. He's such an impressive person to speak to, I got to tell you. And then behind him, you've got these two guys who are relatively young, Montembeau a little bit older than Primo. And the opportunity for both of them to establish themselves in the NHL right now is very strong with Carey Price's situation. So that's going to be a battle to watch as we go along. But I'd also suggest that with the depth being what it is at the position, which is not very deep, that's quite shallow, you could see the Canadians look to the market to try and deepen it a little bit.
Just a couple more for you here, Eric, before we let you go. Really appreciate the time this morning, as always. Anybody that we haven't mentioned that sticks out to you as someone that you're going to watch during training camp and are sort of more intrigued by as to what they might look like in training camp?
Yeah, there's another kid that was drafted in the first round by the Canadians this year. His name's Philip Mejar, and I'm watching him right now. He's got great wheels and really strong hockey sense and really good in the neutral zone. He's just made a great play there right now. And I just think, you know, he comes in with a lot less luster than his fellow Slovakian. But very impressive at the rookie camp. And you know, I think he's going to take the opportunity to show, hey, don't forget about me here. That's one. A kid by the name of Emil Heinemann, who was acquired via trade last year, as you guys know, he's got a really good shot. I think it'll be interesting to see what he can do here. And then there's all the young defensemen. There's Caden Gooley, there's Justin Barron, there's Jordan Harris, there's Arbor Jacki. There's a real possibility here for all these guys to play games in the NHL this year. I think you put Gooley at the head of the class, but the other guys have acquired a little bit of experience, and Corey Schuneman is another guy who is a longtime AHL kind of vet, has kind of established himself as a potential NHL regular. So this is going to be a really interesting battle on the blue line this year.
Last one for you. How big of a training camp is this for Christian Dvorak when it seems like, you know, year one in some people's eyes couldn't have gone worse for the former Coyote?
Yeah, he had a tough start, but he picked it up in the second half after a neck injury, you know, kept him out for a number of games. I think we saw a lot more of what type of player he is as the season went along, much more like the player that he saw in Arizona. He was very effective. I don't think it's that important of a camp for him so much as it is an important season for him. They're looking at him as a possibility to shelter a guy like Kirby Dach, who's still a young centerman. And I think, you know, I wouldn't rush to judgment on this player. I watched him quite a bit in Arizona when he was there. And like I said, he was very effective. And I think, you know, the angle for him will be to get back to his game and play that way. And I think, you know, you look at all the players under Martin St. Louis, they all fared better. A full year under him could bring out something more like what we expected out of Christian Dvorak when he was brought in here. So should be a good year for him.
Eric, always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this. I know you got an early morning scrum out there in Montreal. Appreciate you taking some time out of your day to chat with us. You know, we'll ring your phone again as the season gets underway and check in with all things Habs. Thanks, Eric.
My pleasure. All the best.
There you go. Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca. You can find him on Twitter at, of course, Eric Engels for the latest on the Montreal Canadiens. His day one notebook available at Sportsnet.ca. Joel Edmondson's bad back, Nick Suzuki's injury for the new Habs captain, Brendan Gallagher, healthy and ready to go, along with new addition Mike Matheson's expanded role due to that Edmondson injury and more. Not much to report on when it comes to Sean Monahan with the Montreal Canadiens. He's still not cleared for practice, cleared for contact, I should say. He's working on his conditioning to get back to full strength, and I think he's going to be a really intriguing name to watch for the Montreal Canadiens. As you heard Eric mention in that interview, it's kind of a win-win for Montreal. If it doesn't work out, well, his contract's up at the end of the season. You'll take the asset that you got along with him and move on. But if he can show that he has that worth again, that he can play at an NHL level, there's so much opportunity in Montreal with these young, explosive wingers that they have all of a sudden all over this team, whether it is Cole Caulfield, whether it is Juraj Slefkovský. There's a chance for Sean Monahan to get a role that I just don't know that he was going to get here in Calgary. I know people really wish him well here because Sean did everything to be that kind of player again, but the kind of injuries he had make it hard to bank on that being a constant for him. He's just 27, but I don't know how many 27-year-olds, you know, not even in pro hockey, but in life, have gone through the kind of injury history that Sean Monahan has, and asking him to get back to the player that he once was, I think is unlikely. Does that mean he can't be a productive NHLer? I'm not ready to say that yet. I think he's going to be given every opportunity in Montreal to make it work. And I know there's a lot of people, including myself here in Calgary, that are cheering for him. I think he was a tremendous Flame, despite how it ended for Sean Monahan. There was never a question of doubt or want or will. It was just the injuries that kept getting in the way, and that can be a really frustrating thing. And I think Flames fans will remember him fondly for his time in Calgary, and hopefully Sean is healthy and ready to go for when the Montreal Canadiens make a visit to Calgary, because I think it'll be a very positive one for the former Flames assistant captain. We'll take a break, come back on the other side. Thanks again to Eric Engels of Sportsnet for joining us there. We'll continue our look around NHL training camps with a stop in Columbus. Yes, we'll check in on year one of Johnny Gaudreau in the Columbus Blue Jackets. Oh, and Erica Branson's there as well. Might even check in on former Flame James Neal, who's there on a PTO. Aaron Portsline of The Athletic going to join us to chat some Columbus Blue Jackets hockey next here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Continuing to continue the hockey excitement, training camps opening up across the league, including the Calgary Flames. Day one yesterday at the Saddle Dome. Day two continues today with all three groups getting set for the preseason opener. A split squad game against the Vancouver Canucks coming up on Sunday. We'll have all the coverage right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, Derek Wills and Peter Labardius on the call. Pat Steinberg with your pre and post games as well as intermissions. We'll continue using the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline and checking in on some training camps around the NHL by dropping in with our pal Aaron Portsline of The Athletic to chat about the Columbus Blue Jackets and a couple of intriguing former members of the Calgary Flames in year one in Columbus colors. Aaron, thanks for doing this morning, man. How are you?
I'm doing all right, guys. I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back into another hockey season.
Yes, really excited about it. It's been exciting here in Calgary. The buzz is, look, if you can feel it in the air around here. We're back to having the excitement going through lines and pairings, everything like that. I imagine it's a pretty similar feeling for you in Columbus this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's some big questions here, but good questions. Like, I mean, last year the question was, can they fill out an NHL roster, how tough is it going to be? I think there's much more excitement this year. And the questions are, who's playing between Gaudreau and Laine? Who's playing with Werenski? They're not there yet. This restart is still along its way. They're probably a couple few years away from peaking yet with all of their young prospects, but they took a big step forward this summer, so there is a lot of excitement around this team.
Have you felt that excitement and that change in the fan base since everything that happened this offseason? I mean, you can probably point to the Gaudreau one as the big catalyst for it, but I'm curious if you've been able to feel that from the fan base as we've approached training camp here.
Yeah, well, for sure you can, and the numbers are there too. Season tickets have gone back now to pre-pandemic numbers. The team says they've sold more season tickets this summer than they have in 10 years, any of the previous 10 years, I should say. And you know what? When Johnny Gaudreau says he wants to be here, that's what free agency is. Mm-hmm. That's what this marketplace needed to hear, right? And I know I'm talking to Calgary here, so this story means different things to different markets, but they needed, after years of losing free agents, that there's nothing that can fix your reputation quicker than something like that. And then a couple weeks later, Patrick Laine signs an extension. Could it become a UFA? So they feel like their plan, their marketplace has been sort of reaffirmed this summer. And the Blue Jackets fans now, I think, are fired up to see a competitive product on the ice. And I think they believe in the path that this thing is going. Because they see the prospects like we do and see that there should be a pretty bright future here.
Let's dive into some of the storylines around this team. Aaron, your latest at The Athletic explored the options that the Blue Jackets have for a potential number one center between Gaudreau and Laine. Who out of Boone Jenner, Cole Sillinger, and Jack Roslovic makes the most sense for you in that spot?
Yeah, none of them are perfect. None of them are classically number one centers, right? there are elements in each of their games that you go, that'd be nice. I think Boone Jenner is probably the likely fifth. Again, clearly not in most people's minds number one NHL center. But what do those guys need? They don't need a playmaker. That's Gaudreau. They don't need an incredible puck shooter. That's Line A, one of the best in the league. They need someone that can win puck battles, someone who can win faceoff. It helps if you start with the puck. Net front presence, that's Boone Jenner. All of those things are Boone Jenner. He's not Elias Lindholm, put it that way. And there's not an Elias Lindholm on this roster. But I do think those two guys. And Line A had some success with Jenner last year when Gaudreau was not here, obviously. So I think it can work. I think Jenner, I know Jenner's going to get the first crack there. I also think we should probably recognize by now, especially those who do what we do, this is going to change all year because very few lines stay together in the NHL. They'd love it too. They'd love to find the perfect three that fit together. I think it's going to be a search that takes the season. Cole Sillinger's probably got the most complete game of those three players you mentioned. He's 19 years old. There's a bright, bright future there, but I'm not sure that time is right now.
Was it ever a doubt that Line A would start on a line with Gaudreau, or was that always what you were sort of expecting to see when camp opened?
I think from the minute they signed Gaudreau, and they always were confident that they could get Line A extended. I think Brad Larson, he's even said it a few times, like, let's not get too creative here. Let's not overthink. Yeah. Let's not let the time we have in the summer, be spent overthinking things here. These are two elite offensive players who there aren't too many guys who can think the game at that level. Columbus has two of them now. Finally, why not put them on a line together?
Another flame in the mix in Columbus is Erik Gudbranson on defense. The Jackets talked about wanting to get tougher to play against on D. How important is he going to be to what Brad Larson wants to accomplish with his D pairings?
Yeah, I think he's really important. I mean, as really important as a third-pairing guy can be, he fits that bill, penalty killer as well. But one of the big problems that this team had last year is they were so light on the back end, trying to get by with Boqvist and Dean, and Blankenberg came in late in the season. These smallish players that got pushed around and didn't win many puck battles. Further, there were some unfortunate games late in the season where they got bullied, and they couldn't quite come right out and say it then, but they say it now, that there were games last season where teams tried to intimidate them, push them around, and they just didn't have that element. And we keep thinking that that element is going away from the NHL, but a great way to learn that it has not gone away from the NHL is to not have it on your roster. Because if you don't have that element somewhere, Calgary's always had it. If you don't have that element somewhere on your roster, teams will take advantage of you. And the Blue Jackets knew they needed to fix that. So Gudbranson helps in those two areas. I think he's probably a 14, 15-minute a guy night. And they also added Matthew Olivier from Nashville, who is a fourth-line fighter. I don't think he's a 82-game guy, but I think he slots in against certain opponents.
Zach Werenski's an interesting piece for me. At 25 years old, he made a long-term commitment to this group really before any of the guys that we've mentioned today so far in this hit. And I'm curious what you see Werenski as for this team. He's obviously their number one defenseman, but is there still another step for him to take when it comes to being that number one for Columbus?
Yeah, he is that solid number one, and I don't see a threat to him here. At least now they've drafted a couple of first-rounders that in a few years will maybe vie for that title. David Yerichek, number 6 overall. Denton Matichuk, number 12 overall last year.
Mm-hmm.
They're high on both of those guys, but probably a few years away from being NHL regulars and difference makers. Werenski is obviously a gifted offensive player. He's come a long way defensively. I think he took on more responsibility when Seth Jones left to go to Chicago, was traded to Chicago. I think that's helped Werenski. His numbers went up significantly last year in terms of ice time, in terms of role and presence in the dressing room. But I do think there's another level there. You look around this league, and the elite offensive defensemen now are challenging point-a-game-like numbers. Werenski's always been a mid-40s guy. No harm in that. It scores a lot of goals. I think he can benefit from a better power play this year. Gaudreau certainly helps with that. He should eat some points up there. But I think he's a 60-point guy, and I think he can continue to get better defensively as well.
A couple of young guys that have, you know, garnered some pretty significant NHL time on this Columbus team over the last couple of years that I want to ask you about. And the first one sticking with defense is Adam Boqvist, who comes over, like you mentioned, that Chicago trade. He's a right-shot defenseman. Yeah. He's 22 years old. Only gotten to, I believe it was just over 50 games with the Blue Jackets next year. I imagine this is a guy that they would like to see take another step forward this season.
No question. And it's funny, we spent the whole offseason under the belief that they wanted him to get bigger and stronger. And they do want him to get stronger, but we talked to him a couple days into camp here, and he's said, no, I needed to lose weight and get stronger. Baby fat I needed to get rid of. This kid's one of those athletes that hasn't had to be in incredible shape to play in the NHL, which is just amazing. He is in better shape now. You can see it. Had 11 goals last year in limited time. Had some injuries that he fought through. You know, the goal, in a perfect world, he might even step up with Hrensky on the top pair. I think they wanted that to work last year, and frankly, Boqvist wasn't up to it. Is he up to it now? I mean, it was his foot speed, I guess, that concerned them as much as his inability to win puck battles. That's a bad combination. Can't get there and can't win the puck battle when you do. If that continues to improve, and they think it will, he's got the skill to be a top four guy for sure. And maybe that's next to Werenski. Andrew Peak was there for much of last year. I don't think they thought that was a perfect fit, but the kid played way above his weight to fill that role last year. I think he gets another shot there this year at some point. But they're still trying to figure out the right side of their top four, which is not a comfortable spot to be in before the season.
On the forward side of things, you mentioned him in your article about, you know, looking at center icemen that could potentially fit between Gaudreau and Laine. Year two for Cole Sillinger has to come with a lot of expectations given what he did in year one. But I think it's probably important to note that he's still 19 and playing a tough center ice position in the NHL. How do you look at Cole Sillinger heading into year two, Aaron?
You know, this is a special player, and I don't say that a ton. There's been a bunch of guys that have, young players that have played in Columbus, maybe before their time, and so you're suspicious, frankly, when an 18-year-old makes the team out of camp last year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Blue Jackets expected that, but this kid is so mature. You can tell he's got an NHL father. You can tell he's had really good guidance along the way. Nothing has seemed too big for him. And in his end-of-year conversation with Brad Larsen, on the way out the door after his rookie season, Larsen asked him what he wanted to get out of year two or what he was going to come to camp expecting to do. And Cole Sillinger's comment was, I want to make the team again, coach. And Larsen loves that approach, that the kid is not taking anything for granted. I think he's a breakout candidate this year. There are offensive skills there that you could see just below the surface that were just half seconds away from happening for him last year. And maybe when the game starts to slow down, you'll start to see those come to fruition. He's a special player. He's going to be an impact player in this league for a long time.
And last but certainly not least on this list, he got a taste of NHL action with 9 games last year and then played all over, whether it was in the NCAA or suiting up for Canada at a number of different events. Kent Johnson and, you know, looking forward to him playing a full 82 for the Blue Jackets. I'd imagine that's what the expectation is for the 2021 fifth overall pick.
Yeah, fifth overall pick. We should all have this problem. I can only speak for myself, though, but the kid cannot put on weight.
Yeah.
And every time I hear him talk about it, I get a little pissed off because some of us can't get it off. But this kid's pounding 6,500 calories, and he gained like 8 pounds this summer, right?
Jeez.
And anyways, he's trying to get bigger. Every time you see him, he's got a protein shake in his right hand. And the skill set is just ridiculous, though. Like Patrick Kane, like ridiculous. He's probably going to play on the wing at the start, although he saw some time at center up in Traverse City. He may see time in camp at center just because they don't have a ton of options should they lose one of their top four. So expect Johnson to see time there. But I think they envision him at least early in his career as a left winger. Wondrous level of skill, and is a feisty dude. Works his butt off, but just you know that it's a hard existence in the NHL. He's 6 feet tall, but he's maybe 172 pounds, and he's trying to bulk it up. He can't quite fill out his shell just yet, but boy, you see him carry the puck and dance with it, and the plays that he makes and the stuff he sees that nobody else even sees. That's a difference-making type of player.
We're chatting with Aaron Portsline of The Athletic here on The Big Show in the morning, chatting about the Columbus Blue Jackets heading into a very important year for them after signing Johnny Gaudreau in the offseason. Some expectations and some players to watch for as we continue to chat with Aaron here. I'm curious how you look at the goaltending position for this team, Aaron. Obviously, Elvis Merzlikins is there to be the number one. He signed that long-term contract now at $5.4 million over the next 5 years, but Jonas Korpisalo remains there. I don't know that Elvis, I guess I'll ask you the question, has Elvis really established himself as the number one for this team going forward, or is there still a question to be asked about that?
Well, I think you can safely say that Elvis has established himself as the number one here. But it's kind of like the center position in that respect. Boone Jenner may be their number one. Is he a number one? I think that jury is still out with Elvis. Is he a number one NHL goaltender? Is the ability there? For sure it is. He's an incredible athlete, can make some ridiculous saves. But it's consistency. It's you know, the things that every NHL young goaltender works through. The issue here is that Elvis is not young anymore. This is a guy who's 28, 29 years old now. Look, they have to be better in front of him. I don't think any goaltender has a great season facing the traffic and the shots that this team allowed him to face last year. There were, as I like to say, more breakdowns than a Tom Petty concert. It was a rough scene in front of him. And that has to shore up. It's really hard to judge a goaltender in that situation. Elvis has to be better, but nothing can help quite like the play in front of him improving, them getting tougher defensively and letting him see easier shots and trusting that the play in front of him is going to be what he expected to be. It all fell to you-know-what last year, and this team has had quite the slide, I think, in its resolve since John Tortorella left. If that's the focus of camp, is getting that toughness back, especially in their own zone.
Interesting group of PTOs that joined the Blue Jackets for training camp. We mentioned, obviously, the connections with the Blue Jackets with Gudbranson and Gaudreau as former Flames, but there's a couple interesting PTOs. James Neal's name pops up. He's a former Flame. Victor Rask, former Carolina Hurricane, Minnesota Wild. He played his junior hockey here in Calgary with the Hitmen. But also Ben Harper and Liam Howell are on the roster with PTOs. Aaron, any of these guys you think in a legitimate battle for a spot here, or is this about more of creating competition in camp, bringing these guys in?
I think even maybe there's a bit of creating competition. I don't think anybody really thinks these guys are a threat to land NHL jobs, but you bring them in, you give them a look. I think the bigger issue, not to be too cynical, is you bring James Neal in, it allows the Blue Jackets to have a veteran player for preseason games. You have to meet an 8-player minimum.
Yeah.
This keeps Jake Voracek from having to play 4 preseason games. You bring Rask in, it allows Boone Jenner to play maybe 2 or 3 preseason games, not 4 or 5. He's coming off a back injury. They want to take it easy on him. These guys are going to get a look. Maybe Neal does what he did last year and agrees to go to the American Hockey League. Maybe Rask decides the same. So maybe there's a possibility there. But in terms of them winning NHL jobs, anything's possible. Give them a chance. These are proud veterans and obviously talented players. But I would say as of right now, they are clearly on the outside looking in.
Speaking of winning jobs, you brought his name up earlier, and I'm curious if you see a spot on this team for a David Yurochek to come in and win a spot. We talked about Cole Sillinger, and obviously this Blue Jackets team is not afraid if they feel a player's ready to jump them into an NHL lineup on night one. But Yurochek signed kind of an interesting case here, Aaron, because you mentioned it in your questions article heading into training camp that he's got a lot of different versatility as far as where he can play this year.
Yeah. Yeah, the poor man doesn't know what part of the world he's going to be in a month from now. He could be in Spokane, Washington. He could be back in Pilsen, Czechia. He could be in Cleveland. He could be in Columbus. The man has options, which I guess is a good thing. I think it's quite a reach for him to make the NHL this year. Nothing against him. It's just, man, it's hard as an 18-year-old defenseman in this league. To me, the tempting decision would be to put him in Cleveland, let him adjust to NHL size ice, and let him stay 2.5 hours away. If you've got an injury and he's playing great, why not give him a look? If you send him back to Czechia, he's there till the end of the season, and then you might not be able to get him back till late in the spring. You might not get a look at him, and he's not getting used to playing on NHL size ice. So, to me, that's where it should go. I'm not sure where it will go. I find it hard to believe that, even though it is a really big need on this roster, right side top four defenseman, that's certainly how he projects. Not sure it's realistic to expect an 18-year-old to fill that role just yet.
Just a couple more for you here, Aaron, before we let you go. Anybody that we haven't mentioned that sticks out to you as training camp gets going? Anybody that you're specifically going to keep an eye on that you think fans should be interested in as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really interesting player that they bring over from Russia now. It's been anticipated for a few years, Kirill Marchenko. 6'1", 195-pound winger, right side, right shot. He has had a really good season last year in Russia until it became known that he was coming to the NHL this year, and then was not treated well by his club in Russia, sent to the minors, really sort of cast it off by his team because the Russians were frustrated he was coming here. The kid persevered. He is a happy-go-lucky kid, works his you-know-what off. He was up at Traverse City along with Johnson. Johnson certainly looked more acclimated to that style of play. I think Marchenko was a little taken aback by the physical nature of the prospects tournament, how tight it is in North America, how physical it is. But he battled through it. He scored, I think, 3 goals, had the game winner in their final game. He is a scorer. He is an offensive player. Probably a third liner to start, but I think this guy has top six type skill.
Big picture, Aaron, last one for you. This is always a tough one to ask when it comes to expectations, but I'm really curious where you come out on this team, you know, as training camp gets underway. Obviously, expectations change the second that they sign Johnny Gaudreau, but what's sure. A fair expectation look like for this team? Is a fair expectation to say, hey, you need to be competing for a playoff spot in the Metro, or is improvement still just a fair expectation, even if it doesn't mean a playoff spot?
Yeah, I mean, they were 19 points out of the playoffs last year. That's a big gap to fill. You also look at this Metro, and I think most people agree the Rangers are a really good team. Carolina's a really good team. For me, the question is, are the Islanders as bad as they were last year? They got off to a horrible start and never recovered. And they surprise people. But what do Pittsburgh and Washington do? Those are older teams, but obviously talented teams. They're trying to make a run at it still with the group that's brought them so much joy through the years. Are they ready to back up, and is Columbus going to be good enough this year now to pass one of those teams and get into the top four of the Metro? I think, to me, the goal should be to hang around this year. They really didn't play any games of consequence last year. They should be competitive this year. They were more competitive last year than anyone thought they were going to be. But for them to come down the stretch and be in the hunt, I think would be real progress. And I don't rule out a playoff spot. Weird things happen in the NHL. We've seen it here before. And I think they're a competitive team. They're probably, again, better than people think they are. But that's a huge gap to fill from one year to the next. 19 points is quite a bit to make up.
Aaron, really appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this today, man. Obviously, with the connections between the two teams, I have no doubt we'll be ringing your phone again and checking in with how things are going in Columbus. Thanks for doing this again. Take care, hey?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, man. Always enjoy it.
No, appreciate it. Thanks for the time. Aaron Portsline of The Athletic, kind enough to join us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline this morning. You can find him, obviously, at The Athletic or on Twitter, at aportsline. And yes, the Columbus Blue Jackets and the Calgary Flames linked in the future going forward because of that decision by Johnny Gaudreau. And look, I'm sure Aaron's phone will be one that we ring on as we get closer to the reuniting of Johnny Gaudreau and his former team, whether that be in Columbus or the heavily talked about return to Calgary in a couple of months' times. I've been asked this plenty of times. My view on it stays the same. I think Johnny Gaudreau is going to come back to Calgary to a pretty rude awakening about how he left Calgary and what that means. Does that matter to him? I don't know. He got a pretty significant contract in Columbus. Seems like that's where he wanted to be. And look, as a free agent, that's well within his right to go ahead and do that. I just wonder about what the reception will be like when Calgary's former number 13 comes back to town. And what can he do with that Columbus team? It's hard to say. I think he's going to be an important part of that team. Do I see them as a playoff team? Definitely not. I think there's still questions about that defensive group. Can Johnny do it without a number one center? I think is a huge question in Columbus. He's got a great winger in Laine, who's a strong finisher, but if Boone Jenner, who Aaron just mentioned, is the guy that's going to center that line, I don't know. That's not a number one center. That's a good player, but that's not an Elias Lindholm. That's not what Sean Monahan used to be even. So interesting questions heading into a very exciting year for Columbus Blue Jackets fans. A mix of very young talent that have made an impression very quickly, and now some veteran guys like Johnny Gaudreau who have joined the fold. Good enough to be a playoff team? We'll see. They'll do it for hour two. Thanks to Eric Engels. Thanks to Aaron Portsline for hopping on with us. We'll flip the page over to the final hour still to come, a chat with Tim Leeper, former coach for the Toronto Blue Jays. Another tough one for Jose Berríos last night. What's the worry level for a coach when, you know, you're a couple weeks out from the playoffs and one of your key pitchers has an outing like that? Plus, the Jays in Tropicana just don't mix well. We'll talk to Tim Leeper about some of his memories at the Trop when he joins the program next. Plus, a check-in with Cavalry FC captain Mason Trafford. That's all coming up in Hour 3. Keep it locked here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.